Here at Planet Money, we work in an open office. If I turn my chair around, I can see the entire team. And even if I don't turn my chair around, I can hear them.
So the interesting thing about oil is the marginal cost is so different.
Yes, it's like there's one place that makes screws for a penny. Yeah.
I sit between David Kestenbaum and Jacob Goldstein, and they are bickering all day long. It's like they're a married couple who you're not really sure if they're going to make it.
No, I know. When I first started at Planet Money on my first day, they got into a fight about Keynesian economics, an actual fight. And I remember sitting there thinking, number one, I need to read up on Keynesian economics right now. And number two, I am never going to be able to get any work done in this office. It's too loud. I can't even hear my own thoughts. I can just hear Jacob's thoughts.
Yeah, Robert has some really loud thoughts, too.
It was literally a form of accounting.
Yeah,
that's why writing exists. It's not the other way around. It's not like,
And then there is Noel King's laugh.
Love that laugh.
I know. It's a pretty great laugh. It's epic. But it is hard to get work done with all of this noise happening. And this is the world that most of us are working in. 70% of us work in some kind of open office setup. And I will be honest right here. Sometimes I just dream of having a door with walls that go all the way around me.
Hello and welcome to Planet Money. I'm Nick Fountain.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Today on the show, we meet the man who stole my door and who gave us the hell that is the open office.
Oh, come on. It's pretty nice. We have a nice office.
It's so bad.
Also, we have the inside story of one of the first open offices and all the drama that ensued. Just a heads up, this episode is a rerun. It originally ran in 2016.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from PolicyGenius.com, the easy way to compare life insurance online. PolicyGenius has helped over 4 million people shop for and save on life insurance. You can compare quotes in just 5 minutes. And PolicyGenius also compares disability, renters, and health insurance. If you care about it, they can cover it. Compare and save on life insurance today at PolicyGenius.com.
Hey, Asma.
Hey, Scott.
Another crazy week. We've got North Korea.
Yep, we got Russia.
Midterms.
And, of course, President Trump. And what happens whenever there is crazy news that erupts? We pop into the studio and break it down to make sense.
So if you see a headline,
we've discussed it.
It's the NPR Politics Podcast.
So before we get into the story of the open office, I'll introduce you to one of the people who ended up working there. His name is Paul Spencer, and he works in advertising. Do you have any campaigns that you're particularly proud of?
Well, the one I'm most famous for and I'm still coasting on decades later is for the New York Lottery. Hey, you never know. That was me. That was me.
No way.
Yeah.
So, wow. You've probably sold a lot of lottery tickets.
I know.
Back in 1994, Paul was just starting out in his career. He was freelancing, and he got a call from Chiat Day. It was like the hottest ad agency in New York.
Chiat was a prestigious place. You know, you were really creative if you were there. And you wanted to be able to say, yeah, I was at Chiat. Yeah, no big deal.
Yeah, you know, no big deal. They just made the Energizer Bunny famous and made a bunch of Super Bowl ads. No big deal. Just like the most creative people you could put in a room in New York advertising at the time. That was Chiat Day. And at the time Paul got the call, all of New York was buzzing about Chiat Day's new office.
As the story goes, the CEO of Chiat Day, Jay Chiat, had a vision on the ski slopes of Telluride.
As one does.
Of a totally new workspace.
So he hired this super famous architect to build it for him. His name, Gaetano Pesce.
Gaetano Pesce, Italian, from Venice. I'm 76, and I work on the field of creativity.
This is the man who stole my door.
Deep breath, Stacey, deep breath. For what turned out to be such a big moment in office history, the instructions that Jay Chiat gave Gaetano, they were pretty vague.
What did he say when he came to you?
He wanted an office without paper.
An office without paper?
Yes.
So this sounds kind of mundane, but if you think about it, this was profound. I mean, most of the things we think of as being associated with an office are essentially paper management devices. Staplers, hole punches, file folders, file cabinets. And if you think about it, even desks are pretty much just there to hold paper. But this was 1994. You didn't really need paper all that much anymore. There were laptops. There was email.
The office, It was kind of just a holdover from a more primitive time. And these guys, they were trying to reinvent the office, start anew.
Gaetano Pesci was given a blank slate, the entire floor of a skyscraper in Lower Manhattan, 29,000 square feet. So he went down to check it out.
Yes, I remember. It was in the evening. The space was raw, empty, with bulbs attached to the ceiling.
What did you think when you saw it?
I started to think you don't need the office.
You don't need the office.
Gaetano Pesci started sketching out designs for this new office, the likes of which the world had never seen. It looked like a giant living room.
It was an open space with a lot of corner, with a sofa, comfortable chair, with a coffee shop. Because I think people, when they meet, they like to have a drink, they like to eat.
This was radical. At the time, remember, it's 1994, the typical workplace was all about cubicles. Everything was uniform, everything was efficient, there were neutral colors. And Gaetano was going to build a big living room with a coffee shop.
There was also a ping pong table, a giant staircase to nowhere, and the pièce de résistance, the floor, poured plastic resin, and not beige or white or any normal color. It was the color of a tangerine, with all these red, yellow, and blue designs, like arrows and big loops and words, poured by Gaetano himself, who had to walk around with special spiky shoes while it was drying.
The way he tells it, his inspiration was pretty much whatever he was thinking about that day.
I remember in the corner one day when I was doing the floor, I was thinking Venice. I put the arrow on the floor. At the end, I write Venice because that was the direction of Venice.
You know, east. Venice is east.
The desks in this office were all on wheels, and the chairs were plastic with coiled springs for legs.
And critics went crazy over this new office. Here is a quote from the New York Times Magazine. It said, "The workers seem to be traveling through some new, improved dimension. These young, gap-garbed hotshots go breezing by. They pace, they stride, they circle, gesticulating with one hand, clutching a cellular phone in the other. Or they briefly touch down at a computer console, one of a cluster of free-floating workstations that can be wheeled around the floor to take advantage of the spectacular skyline views." Thumbs up. I think that's really long-winded for
Two thumbs up. So many people wanted to see the office, Shiat Day started arranging tours.
And this is the office that Paul Spencer walked into on his first day. That was the guy you heard from the beginning who had just taken this exciting new job, his dream job. And when he showed up, he was almost as excited to see the office as he was to start working there. The elevator took him up to the 38th floor, and he walked into the office of the future.
You know, I just remember a lot of orange and taupe colors, and there was a design like drawings and paintings built into the floor. It was like there was a kind of rubbery coat over it, and it felt good. I remember thinking, wow, this is great. This is so beautiful.
Here he was at one of the most creative places to work in advertising and in the most creative office space he had ever seen. This was not a bland cubicle farm. This was inspiring.
Paul walks up to the reception desk. They had this cool system where you would check out a laptop and a cell phone for the day. And the laptops and cell phones were kept in these lockers that looked pretty cool. They looked like they were out of a movie.
You know, like a police drama where they're like unlocking metal cages and giving you your 38 revolver or whatever. It was like, wow, I'm going into creative battle.
Paul met up with this guy he was going to partner with, this art director named Mike. And he said, "Hey, Mike, it's so nice to meet you. This place is amazing."
And he just kind of like shrugs and rolls his eyes.
And you were like,
I wonder why. I mean, it's so beautiful.
Paul starts his first day at work, and a few hours later, he and Mike, the art director, are sitting in Gaetano Pesci's cafe, batting around ideas for an ad for a telephone company, and Paul starts to have this weird feeling.
It was kind of like late in the day, looking across the table in the kitchen at Mike, and that, there's a problem. This place is kind of, you know, scorching my brain. It's like I can't focus.
Everything was too bright, too loud, too open.
And Paul was not the only one having a bad reaction to The Office. Shalom Auslander was a creative director at Shiat Day.
It felt like sitting inside of a migraine. Like if you could climb inside a migraine headache, that's what that felt like.
It wasn't just the bright colors and the plastic floor, although he did say that the floor had this weird smell that gave him terrible headaches. Shalom says the real problem was the openness.
Extreme openness, right? Because once you got your laptop and your cell phone, you had no idea where to go.
For me, it was a very unmoored kind of feeling. So you spend a lot of time. I walked a lot. I walked a lot because I was constantly walking around and around. You know, hey, did you see John? Yeah, he's in that room, or he's in that room, or no, he just left to that room. And passing other people who were walking around in the other direction, looking for people.
And all of the stuff, the personal stuff that the old style of office had contained, it all came spilling out in this big open space.
The saddest element of it is that you'd see somebody with a phone, just a poor human being in this awful plasticness with a phone pressed to their ear, and clearly something was going on. They were getting divorced. Somebody was dying. Something human was happening on the other end of that phone. And they're just walking around, and all they're saying is, hang on. Let me find somewhere. Hang on. Hey, Jim. Hey, Dan. Hey, no, wait. Hang on. And just like desperately, like, and going into some dark corner somewhere and just sitting there with their heads in their hand, trying to have some interaction with an actual human being.
Shalom says he just couldn't get any work done.
Did you have like coping mechanisms?
Yeah, it was called my house. I would go to my house, which did not have plastic floors or hives or nooks or work crannies or whatever else they called it. I would just go home and sit at my ordinary kitchen table and have an ordinary martini and figure out some commercial for whatever and go back the next day and act like I'd been there.
Paul Spencer told me he started to hate the open office, and he felt really bad about it. He felt like maybe he wasn't cool enough, or maybe somehow he was failing the space.
It's like this whole thing was a big, big experiment to figure out what would happen if you freed people from cubicles, from their cages. What potential can be realized when you let people run free?
It turns out people realized they just really wanted walls.
Paul says he would walk into the office looking for his colleagues, and he'd find them in the few places with doors, with walls, the conference rooms.
Clearly, there was like tribal happenings going on there where people had like camped out in like little conference rooms that were supposed to be just, you know, temporary. You would come in and, you know,
they'd like taken them over.
They'd be like, get the hell out. This is mine. You know, they'd like take over a corner and they're like, we're in here. And it was like all about kind of getting in and getting your corner early.
You felt like you were part of somebody's idea of how people were supposed to be, but we're not really that way.
The architect of this space, Gaetano Pesce, would drop by to visit his creation. And he told me, yes, he did hear this complaint that the open office thing was just not working for some people. Does that make you feel bad?
No. New things bother. At the beginning, when you make something new, is the first reaction is I don't like.
I mean, do you think the open office went too far?
No, there is never too far.
I mean, what would you say to somebody who said, I worked in this office and like it was beautiful, but I couldn't get any work done?
He didn't understand the possibility, the creativity.
Gaetano said he's heard from a lot of people who loved this space. And also, for what it's worth, these did turn out to be some of the most creative years for Shiat Day. They came up with the famous Apple Think Different campaign with the Taco Bell Chihuahua.
Yo quiero Taco Bell.
That one.
And other companies looked at Shiat Day's office space and they said, I want that. The open office seemed exciting. It was cool. People could communicate and collaborate really easily.
And added plus, it was cheaper. You could fit more people into a smaller space, save on rent.
In the end, though, the Shiat Day open office experiment was short-lived. Shiat Day was doing so well, it got bought up by another company, a much bigger company, that moved them out of this office and into a much more traditional space. Just a few years after they'd moved into this crazy new open office, they moved out.
Gaetano's creation was dismantled. Architecture critics started calling it a failure, a good idea taken too far.
But the office didn't die entirely. In fact, Gaetano Pesci started seeing pieces of it all over the place. He saw one of the rolling desks in Milan, a plastic chair in Paris, a piece of a wall panel in Aspen.
The office was exploded around the world.
It really was an open office.
Yes, yes, it was.
Shalom Auslander and Paul Spencer both eventually left Chiat Day. But they said everywhere they went, this office followed them.
It followed all of us. If you look at pictures of the old Chiat Day and you look at pictures of Google or Facebook or the NPR headquarters in D.C., they look the same.
The open office, in some form, is everywhere. It's inescapable.
When I die, I am going to hell. And it is going to, they've definitely gone over to open space.
So, Nick, I have been working in this office with you guys for almost 2 years now.
Yeah.
And even though I had my doubts in the beginning, I have to say there are some things that I really like about it. I feel like my ideas get a lot better because we're always batting them around all the time. And I feel like I laugh a lot more than I did when I was working in a room by myself. I think I'm actually happier.
Yeah, I feel like this is the most collaborative and funny place I've ever worked. And I think for all of us, there's a larger just human experience point to make here, which is that as human beings, we crave human interaction. We like to be around other humans.
Yes, that's true. All of those things are true. And sometimes I just want you guys to stop talking.
I'll tell you what. I had a piece of chicken. So I went to Hale and Hearty.
I stopped caring. I'm sorry.
I got some five.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Discover Card. Become a new card member, and Discover will match all the cash back you've earned at the end of your first year. Learn more at discover.com/match. Limitations apply.
Why do women get paid less than men?
Why does Louisiana State University have a lazy river and a tiger habitat?
The Indicator, a daily podcast where we tackle the big economic questions.
All right, so we've left the NPR office.
Yes.
Why have you taken me here?
This is the one quiet place on the floor of our whole building. It is a dead-end hallway right next to a fire exit, and you always see people in this hallway making private calls.
Or, I guess, doing the credits. If you have any horror stories from your open office experiences, please send us an email. You can send it to planetmoney@npr.org.
Or you can tweet us at Planet Money.
I'm at Nick Fountain.
And I'm at S. Vanek Smith.
Special thanks to Sally Helm, who produced today's podcast. Thank you, Sally.
Thanks, Sally. And we would also, of course, like to thank our wonderful colleagues. They might be loud, but we love them very much. We would not change them if we could. Maybe just the volume.
I'm Nick Fountain.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Thanks for listening.
All right, we have a little challenge for you, dear listener. Let's see if you can deal with what we deal with every day, the banter that happens. Can you do this challenge?
It is called the Open Office Challenge, and here it is. For the next 30 seconds, name all the state capitals you can, and yeah. Go.
It's the great thing. There was one guy who thought this up, who was like, hey, you know, it's time to take the gold to Milan. It's like, oh, they got a ship taking the gold here. Wait a minute!
Stop the ship! Oh, stop the ship!
Look at this. Like two ships passing each other, kind of an identical amount of gold. Yeah.
Wait a minute!
Wait. And they both hit each other.
As they're sinking to the bottom of the ocean with all the gold, like,
I have to know.
Okay, time. How many did you get, Nick?
Five.
That's better than I did.